to say a few more points about this Isser of Nezikin. So someone asked me yesterday also, because I had mentioned that the Reb Lachman, on the first day of Shiva when I was there, we were learning Bava Kamma. Anyone finds my Gemara, let me know. And the first shiur was about the Stipler and the Hashavas Aveda and his objections to that piece. So I was asked what exactly were the objections. So I didn't remember, so I emailed him. And I just brought up the Stipler and this position of Hashavas Aveda being the main Isser, which, as you saw also yesterday, it's not only the Stipler. Rabbi Chanan has this idea in a few places, and the Rashash, if you got a chance to see that today, the Rashash in Subas and Yud Ches and Beis has this idea, and the Chalkas Yov and a few others, but he was not thrilled with it. So among the points that he mentioned in the email, I have them all, but one is the exceptions, like I mentioned yesterday from the Horus Nussin. And we discussed yesterday how bothered we are by the exceptions, but that was one point that he mentioned. And he said, also, would you say that the prohibition of being mazik doesn't apply to Bnei Noach, because you don't have a chiyuv of Hashavas Aveda? So, again, that goes to, I think, the same framework we discussed yesterday as far as how much of an objection that is, but that was a part of his point. He also added that it says that's clearly not the pshat in the Rashba, which I assume he means the Rashba we were talking about on Daf Beis and Mid Beis, the Rashba where he implies that there's a suffix Isser involved in Nezikin, and that Hashavas Aveda is presumably not coming from a perspective of Isser. So therefore, that's another possible objection. I think, was there one more point? Let's see. Okay, so there's no mention of this at all in the Talmudim of Farshayim HaRishonim. Okay. And suggests that maybe this is a poetic extension of the value. Okay, in any event, so it's not not a big fan of using Hashavas Aveda as the source. Yeah.
So what about would that also apply to the Avdol Rechak Kamocha, because that's also not an Isser?
Yeah, you know, as the primary source, it also would perhaps suffer from weaknesses. Now, again, I mentioned yesterday, I'm not sure how much his weaknesses have to bother us, but either because you could say in Hanami, so then maybe they will have these limitations, or we can really assume that it's a package deal, that everything comes together, and that in some cases multiple concepts and multiple psukim of the Torah might be relevant, and in others they won't. But in any event, that was his comment on that position. I also mentioned to you to take a look at the Tosfos. If you had a chance to see the Tosfos, we'll mention it together now, that the question that the Achronim ask, which they mentioned to want to be a little limited in how much emphasis to put on it, is the question of, do we see the Chiyuv of Nezikin coming from a perspective of Adam HaMazik, that essentially man's property is like him on some level, so it's as if he's being Mazik when his property is Mazik, or is it because of the lack of Shmira? And if you fail to be Shomer when the responsibility is there, so then there is a obligation that comes with that. So if you saw the Tosfos here in the involvement base, so we can just look at it together for a minute. So the last quarter of the Tosfos, the line starts off with the Yesh Lomar. It says, Yesh Lomar de Slorahu, de Gazlan Nichnas Tachas Abaylan. It makes sense that the Gazlan, somebody who steals an item, is going to be liable in the same sense as the Bailim. The Kevan Shahotzi Mirshas Bailim, because since he took it out of the property, out of the influence of the Bailim, Shahayu Chayavim Bishmirasa, they were originally responsible for protecting it. Ve'ein HaBailim Yecholu Mishomra, and they can't because he took it. So Lefish Nigzalamahan, because he stole it, so Yeshal HaGazlan Lishomra. So then it becomes his responsibility, because he clearly left it in his own hands. So for the purposes of Nezikin, the owners is a way of saying whoever is able to guard it. So that's all very interesting. Right, so that's one way of understanding it. And then it goes on to, Tosus goes on to suggest another possibility, that you could also say, it's just a second to last line, V'od kevan de gazlan kamale b'rishose gam l'inyan onsen, that since he stole it, it's now in his rishos. Also, for the purposes of onsen, so we could consider him like an owner, even more than a partner. That essentially, it's like it's in his property for certain purposes. So, some suggest that you have essentially the two stadim here. That the first side is that it's all about the Chi of Shmira, and you understand that if you stole it from the actual Shomrim, now you become the one who is obligated in Shmira. And you also have a second idea that essentially it's about the Mamono component, and for certain purposes, the Ganav is considered to be the one who can call it Mamono or needs to call it Mamono because of the situation, and therefore it's going to be his responsibility from that angle. Hi.
Doesn't the Gemara then qualify that we were saying that the official missions that list them were Kona and Shiva by him?
So he's saying separately even from the Kenyan idea. I think he's saying just the idea that there are certain elements that it has to be considered in his Rishus, just by Metzias, and therefore for this purpose it makes sense that that's
right, but why not? Wouldn't it be a stronger
support or drive
for them to save it if we're going as far as
that
they're actually
coming?
It becomes
sense. Maybe
it's really his,
and
for sure.
Okay, could be. So that's another point to keep in mind. So Rav Asher Weiss Shlita, who I said a little bit about before, his by the way, his sefer on Bava Kamma has a particular chashivas to it, because I think Bava Kamma was the first sefer he ever wrote. And he just redid it, just in time for our learning Bava Kamma. So I don't want to take too much credit, but it happens to be just in time for our yeshiva learning Bava Kamma. So the sefer was redone. So this is like all of the svarim are very nice, but the sefer has a particular chashivas and history to it. It's now on round two, being his first sefer. You know, he has a particular fondness for it. So there are a lot of very nice essays in the Sefer and Bava Kamma. So in the first piece, so he considers some of these issues, and he assumes that really it's neither. It's not one absolutely or the other, that it's about the Mamono Shehizik or about the lack of Shmira. For various reasons, neither one is totally satisfying. And as we indicated the other day also, that you'll see indications in every different direction within the same Gemara, within the same Rishonim. So it's hard to, it's part of why I don't want to spend too much time on it. It's hard to get too absolute about one Mahalach here or the other. And as he notes, for example, to say the Chi of Shmira, so we still have to say it's more than just the Chi of Shmira, because, all right, so you were negligent, but in general, the action of Hezek here is going to be less than a grama, and the grama one is pater for. So what we essentially have here is we have gzeiras hakasev, the psukim telling us that there is a chiyuv, that is a gzeiras hakasev, essentially extending the property to the person himself, and saying that this is the man's responsibility because this is all his property. It's as if it's his shaliach, and you're liable for what your shaliach does. So therefore, that's all concerned here as well. And within that, we have to still figure out what are the parameters. So the parameters are that within the goalposts of where it's likely to be dangerous and where you could know that it's dangerous and where you have a reasonable responsibility to prevent that from happening. So within that framework, the Torah was mechayev you to exert that control. And if you don't, then it goes back to it being your responsibility because of the gezeiras hakasid. So essentially, all the points are true, that it's basically considered like you did it because this is your estate causing the damage. And that liability only comes within a certain framework of insufficient shmira and the like. But if there is sufficient shmira, so then you're exempt under those circumstances. So all the various indications that you see in different sources, they all can combine to essentially that idea. So, but still we can keep in mind where you find one indication or the other, and where you find that there are elements of both. So with that, I should also mention, so one pasuk we haven't called attention to yet, which is important, and one of the Avos Nezikin is the person, the Adam HaMazik. So where does it say in the Torah that an Adam HaMazik is Chayev? Where is that from? So that's actually not from Mishpatim, but that's from Parshas Emor. And Rashi quotes that pasuk, and the Rambam also quotes the pasuk in Chovel HaMazik. In Parakei Halacha Aleph, we don't have a Chumash here, right? Sorry?
I have
okay, if you want to bring the Tanakh over, that'd be good.
The Rambam quotes the same pasuk.
The Rambam quotes the same pasuk. So the pasuk in Parsha Zemur, Shkayach, thank you. It is Perek. It's with the end of Emor. The very end of Emor. Pasuk Chof Dalet. Perek Chof Dalet. Sorry, Perek Chof Dalet. Pasuk Yud Ches. Umake Nefesh Behema Yishal Mena. Nefesh Tachas Nefesh. So there you have the notion that the person who strikes an animal, strikes property, is obligated to pay for it, is obligated to make restitution. So that, again, the Rishonim say, that's where we find the reference to Adam HaMazik, to the idea of the person causing damage. And it's interesting to contemplate what that means as a model for the whole concept of Chiyuv Nezikin. So there is an interesting piece about this in the Sefer Chavetzalos HaSharim. Familiar with Sefer Chavetzalos HaSharim al Torah? It's a popular contemporary Sefer. It's a Sefer, he's got more volumes now, but the Sefer that's organized on Chumash. See, Rashi, by the way, if you have your Gemara Rashi on the Chumash, Rashi quotes the Pasuk here in Dalet Amid Beis. And at the bottom of Dalet Amid Beis, Umanasech. So, Rashi and the Rambam quote this Pasuk as the source for Adam HaMazik. So in the Sefer Chavetzalos HaSharon al HaTorah, on Parshas Emor, on this pasuk, so he has many, many pages. Kedarka Bakodesh, you're familiar with the Sefer, he has a lot to say, but it's broken up into shorter essays. So I'm going to recommend here two essays. The first of the many, if you read them all together, it goes on for like 20, 30 pages. But the first, which is about two pages, so he talks about this as a model for the Chiyuv of Adam HaMazik. And he notes that in this example of a man who is mazik behema, so to use that as a model for tashlumin, so we find four components. So as you have a maisa hezik, you have a chefetz that is huzak, that is damaged. You have a value depreciation of the item, and you have a loss to the owner. Yeah, they're important. So you have the maisa hezek, you have the object that is damaged, you have a value depreciation of the object. Value, like a monetary value, it's worth less now. So you have a value depreciation, and you have a loss to the owner. So why are those four things important? And it's very interesting, as he notes, that if you tweak any one of these four, so you may have a question whether there is an obligation of restitution. So how could you tweak these four? So let's give one example for each. So how could you have all three without the first, without the maisa hezek? So that's what we call grama. Right? It could be that you did something indirect, which doesn't constitute a maisa hezek, but it brought about this situation, and that will cause a damage, but you're pater. Because Grama Benazikin is Pater. Now, Garmi, God willing, we'll get to what exactly are the in-between kind of circumstances. But, strictly speaking, you remove that first step, you remove the Maisa HaHezek, so that created a Ptur. What about taking away the second, or tweaking the second? So can you have a situation where you have the other three, but not the second, the idea of a damaged object. So that you could have also, right? We spoke about this as well. What would that be called? That would be called a hezek she'eino nikker. Like if you created a spiritual problem, a halachic problem with the item. So the item is still complete on the surface, still looks the same, but is worth less, and you did something to make it worth less, and you caused a loss to the owner, so you could have those three without number two. And there again, strictly speaking, you're pater. What about doing all the other parts, but not causing a loss to the owner? Can that happen? Sorry?
Value depreciation.
Say it again?
Value depreciation. Which one is it?
So, well, here the value depreciation would be a loss, right? So, is there a way that you can do all the other three elements but not have the value depreciation? Let's say, not have it be worth less.
Or not?
Sorry.
That's the hezek she'eino hekker.
No, it is worth less when you have the hezek she'eino hekker. The object is the same, but it's not worth as much because you can't use it. But let's say you have a situation. Well, one situation that we mentioned yesterday is what if the item is insured, and so you could have a maisa hezek, and you could actually damage the item. But the owner is not going to take a monetary loss. Yes, sir.
And how is a loss to the owner and a value depreciation of the item different?
So I'll explain. Well, you'll see the examples. But here, this maybe we're skipping to the fourth, actually, the way it says. This is the loss to the owner. But so here, you are not causing a loss to the owner, right? Because insurance is going to pay for it. So I mentioned before that I'm recommending two essays in this Chavetz Halas HaSharon. So the second essay, he has a nice little survey about different shitas in postgame about the insurance issue, about when something is covered by insurance, are you liable or not? So it could be that if you consider everything to be a function of your Maisa Hezek, so then despite the fact that the person is compensated by insurance, that doesn't necessarily absolve you of the cost of your Maisa Hezek. Now, legally and morally, if the person receives payment from both, he'll probably have to tell the insurance company that he's receiving compensation and follow whatever the rules of the policy are. But it doesn't necessarily get the other guy off the hook, because it could be that his Maisa Hezek obligates him to pay, even though he's not really affecting the bank account of the owner. Or another interesting scenario, which Post can talk about. Let's say somebody has a very rare item, and they're valuable, has two of them, and they're valuable because they're rare. So they're very expensive. And you break one of them. So on the one hand, you just broke this very expensive item. But guess what happened at the same time? So yes, he's guessing it, right? That because now there's only one left in the world, so the other one became twice as valuable. So maybe you should say, okay, you're putter there because you didn't cost the owner anything, because he has the same value that he had before, he just has it in one item instead of two. So there it seems to be the same question. So as you say, you're bichayev for your maisa hezek, despite the fact that the item is not, the item, despite the fact the owner is not losing any actual overall monetary value. Hi.
Could you not have, could you have a case of that though, like in terms of the insurance, if the plus, if you're costing that, because it's intended, like, you're getting a bonus, such as you said yesterday, that was, mm-hmm. like, you get a bonus, you know, the insurance baby stuff, pull back, because it's still a
bonus. Yeah, it seems to go to that runs off the assumption really that it's about your Maisa Hezek, that since you should be liable for your Maisa Hezek regardless of how it plays out in the end of the day, so those two go together, the insurance question or the doubling of the value of what's left question, they both correlate to that. And maybe we should say that even though the owner is not suffering from this consequence, but your Maisa Hezek is the same, so then maybe there should still be a chiyuv. So here this is an issue where posts can debate. And again, there's a good summary of the various shitas and the more contemporary tshuvas that talk about this question in the next essay in the Chavasal Sashar. And what about the last element? Can you have a situation where you didn't really change the value of the item, but you did cause a loss to the owner? So how could you do that? So it's a little harder to imagine, but there are such scenarios. You have things that are only valuable to certain specific individuals, which sounds like we're talking about things of sentimental value, but that's a different issue. God willing, we can talk about that later on. There's some interesting things to talk about that. But let's say we're talking about something like prescription glasses. So they have limited value once they exist and they're made for a certain person. So they have limited value because you can't sell them on the open market. No one's going to be interested in buying them. So you take somebody's glasses, if you were to try to sell them, you're not going to get very much for them. But if you break them, you are causing a loss to the owner. So how do you view something like that, where it is a loss to the owner even though the item does not objectively have value? And this, as you note, seems to be a machlokas, the Nesivis and the Chazon Ish. The Nesivis saying one's putter in such a case, and the Chazon Ish saying one's chayiv in such a case. But that also reflects this fourth variable. So it's a very interesting discussion. Just, okay, I'll take Joe's question first. Yeah?
I'm just a little confused about the difference between the variable of a value depreciation of the item and a loss to the owner, and how those are different ones.
Okay, so let's review now all the four cases. How you could tweak, in each case, it represents tweaking one of the four things. So first we mentioned Grama Benazikin. Grama Benazikin has three of a damaged item, a less valuable item, and a monetary loss to the owner. Now what it's missing is the Maisa Hezek. So there, the din is Pater. Without getting into the details of Garmi, but general Pater. Pater at least Bidine Adam. You know, there's more to it, and it's certainly usher to bring about, but Pater. Second category we spoke about was a situation where the item is 100% physically complete, but there was a maisa done by the other guy, and this item, despite being physically complete, is now worth less, and the owner takes a monetary hit. Why is that? Because maybe it has some halachic effect. So that's what we call hezek she'eino nikar. And again, so you're pater. The third category we talked about was what if you have a maisa hezek and the object is physically damaged and it is worth less than it was, but there's no loss to the owner. Why is there no loss to the owner? Well, we mentioned two possibilities. Maybe he's insured. Or maybe it's a rare item that because you took away the other one, now the one that's left is worth twice as much. And there's more to talk about. Machlokas HaPoskim, how to address those situations. And the last situation, we talked about where there is a cost to the owner, but the item is not reduced in value. You have that element changed. You have a maisa hezek, you have an object that is broken, and you have a monetary hit to the owner, but the item itself didn't change value. Why didn't it change value? Because it's the kind of thing which you couldn't really sell anyway, and value is determined by how much you could sell it for. So if it's a very personalized item, like prescription eyeglasses or something like that, so the value didn't change because it wasn't worth too much on the open market to begin with. And the other elements are still there. So is that something where you have a chi of nezikin in that case? So there, again, it's machlokas haposkim. He mentions the nesivus and the chazanish. So that also reflects yet another difference there. So again, recommending, if you want to take a look at inside, recommending that first of the many essays he has, the first about these elements of the hezek, and the second for a little bit of a survey of the question of insurance. Hi.
So for the prescription glasses thing, though, like if they're breaking, even though they're limited on the open market, they're still going to lose some. I figure they lose some value. So if we're talking about the case where specifically they will not, you've gotten zero for them on the open market before, and they're still getting zero for them even though they're broken.
Presumably, to keep it simple, or because you know, say zero, but let's say it's always worth parts, right? Somebody's glass is always worth something, but much less than the cost to purchase them. So it's still worth that. So let's say right now your glasses are valuable for parts, which is a fraction of their actual cost. So if they're broken, they probably would still get the same amount for the parts. But if they're broken in a way that they're useless to you, you take that monetary hit, but the parts are still probably worth the exact same. So you can easily imagine a scenario where you don't have to say zero, but it didn't effectively change because of what you did to it. Or, if you want to be more precise, you could say, all right, there is some difference, but the difference doesn't really come close to the actual loss the owner has. So right now, if the owner wants to sell his prescription glasses online, he'll get 10% of the value. And now that it's broken, he'll get 5% of the value. But still, there's the 95% that he's losing out, and that's where our discussion is. Okay? Question about that? Yeah?
I just want to, make sure that the point is there are four components that you can, and then if there's a tweak in any of the components, that might be enough to...
Yeah, well, essentially, that if you look at this example as the test case for what an Adama Mazik is, so then there are four parts that are going on there. So if you tweak any one of those four parts, you find the picture may be different. You find either that you are pater or there's a machlokas, whether there's a chiyuv, that any one of those are able to affect the picture. Hi.
How do you see these four things in the pasuk?
Just because that's the reality. If somebody damages somebody, somebody hits somebody's animal, so that's what's going on. Maisa hazik, he hit it, the animal is damaged, and that results both in a less valuable animal and in a loss to the owner. You wouldn't have to say that there are four parts were it not for the fact that we could come up with a way to tweak each one of them. You know, if we didn't have nafkaminas, if we didn't have a case where you could tweak one of them, we could have called the three parts. But now we see that there are ways to change the scenario that break down into four separate things. So that seems to be what emerges from that model. Okay, so with that, so that gives us, again, a little bit of a foundation just to say a few more words. So now, just to say a word about the Mishnah, so the Mishnah is going to tell us that there are Arba Avos Nezikin, and God willing, after Yontif, we'll get into the specific qualities of what these Avos are and what they mean practically and what they end up impacting in the practical world. But what does it mean to be an Av? Right, so that's not a chinuch question. You know, what does it mean to what does it mean in this case to be an av? So the Gemara tells us already that there are three areas in halacha where we have avos toldos language. Right, so what are the three areas? Zikin, Shabbos, and Tuma. So the Gemara wants to know: do we say that toldosehem ki yotze behem or not? Are the toldos like the avos? So what's going on with the question is that we find that the usage is different in different places, because when we talk about tuma, so what we mean is that the language av and tolda is appropriate because one item confers tuma to another item, and then it descends in severity. So you have a notion of a father and a son and a grandson and a great-grandson, etc. You have significance to that imagery of descending status. In Shabbos, we're talking about something else. When it comes to Shabbos, so we assume that the avos are the general categories, which are derived somehow, it's a pretty subtle process, and that's a whole discussion of itself, is derived from the Mishkan. So the malachos that were utilized in creating the Mishkan become ki'ilu, they are all written in the Torah, and therefore those are the avos malachos of Shabbos. There seems to be a tradition that there were 39, the Gemara suggests maybe it's a gematria, maybe there are other ways of getting it. That's a little bit of a tangent for us right now, but somehow within Hilchos Shabbos we derive that there is a number 39 and that we should look for those 39 within the Mishkan. So we get 39 avos. So what's the difference between an av and a tolda in Hilchos Shabbos? Not very much. That a tolda is considered to be a Isser Min HaTorah, and an Isser Min HaTorah with the same consequences. So the only difference really is that in terms of liability, when we talk about, let's say, a korban, so the malachos are considered to be distinct from each other, to each create their own independent isser, so to speak. So a tolda is grouped with its own av. So practically speaking, and certainly b'zman hazeh, where we don't have onshin anyway, so if you tell me a malacha is a tolda, sounds like it has almost no nafkamina lahalacha. That an av and a tolda are treated pretty much the same, almost exactly the same, as far as severity, as far as everything else. Parenthetically, just this shouldn't be a misleading statement, there is a position that a number of achronim have, that a tolda she'ena tzricha legufa is significantly more lenient than a malacha shein etzricha legufa. So again, we're not going to get into all the details of Hilchos Shabbos now, but just to mention that, because I just said there's no nafkamina, so for the sake of clarity that there are some achronim who maintain that, and others who object, and they say, why are you saying that? The Gemara says there's no real nafkamina. So whether that counts as an exception to what the Gemara is saying or not, that's a whole discussion. But essentially, an Av and a Tolda are basically treated the exact same. So what is the significance of the terminology of Av and Tolda in Hilchos Shabbos? Yeah, so Hasra is when we're grouping them together, right? So what language should I use for Hasra is going to be affected by this. But it's not like a Tolda is any less usher than an Av. It doesn't have any weaker impact. So what's the point of language like Av and Tolda in the context of Hilchos Shabbos? So what it seems to mean there, it's just that it comes to the question of how we determine it in the first place, that the Av were provided from the Mishkan. And when you have another action that serves the same purpose, even if it's a different pu'ula, it's a different action, but it serves the same purpose, that gets categorized with that Av. And that's why there are those who think we should be more lenient by a tolda shein etzricha legufa, because ein etzricha legufa is about the purpose. So you have a tolda shein etzricha legufa, so you change the pu'ula and you change the purpose. That's already a pretty significant difference. But if the purpose is the same as the malacha, and the action is different, so that's called a tolda. So it has to do with how we come onto the concept in the first place. That the avos are our foundational points, and the toldos are derived from there. So it's a different usage than tuma. Right? Tuma really means that the next generation is different than the first generation. And in Shabbos, it doesn't really mean so much of a practical difference. It has to do with how it's derived. So that's why the Gemara here wants to know, the toldos of Avos Nezikin, are they the same? They have the same rules, or are they different? And the Brisker Rav in his Sefer here discusses that we're going to find, when we get more into it, that all of the Avos have quirks. They have certain differences from each other in terms of what scenarios are you chayiv in, what scenarios are you patur in, etc., etc. So there's really two elements to each of these avos, or two sets of elements. Among the four avos, each one has some factor that distinguishes it, whether it's kavanasa lahazik, or whether it's mazik just as a matter of its normal course, or whether it's hana lahazeka, is there any benefit that comes to the mazik? So each one has its own distinguishing characteristic. That's why it gets a separate category. And within those categories, there also are all kinds of rules, all kinds of exceptions. So maybe the Gemara's question is, all right, we know that we have these four categories to identify different damaging forces, and Toldo Sehen will refer to things that also fit those categories, but does that mean that every Toldo also has the same exceptions and also has the same quirks? So that's something we'll have to figure out. But essentially, that gives us this concept of avos for whatever nafkaminas it has. And the Mishnah tells us that, at least the way the Tanoim assumed, that there are four categories. The Gemara is later on going to tell us other opinions that had more. But that's essentially the four that we work off of. So far, so good? Okay, so I wanted to share with you, I couldn't find a better way to do this than to read it inside. I just brought it with a kind of segue from our Bava Kamma to our Elul focus. And we'll use this as the segue, that this really brings out very beautifully one of the ideas that we mentioned in a little bit of a hashkafic vein, one of the ideas that we mentioned on the first day. That we spoke about how there is a philosophy behind Bava Kamma and behind Nezikin, and the notion of somebody who wants to be a chassid should study Milei de Nezikin, that it addresses a certain component of our personality, and gives us the sensitivity that we need to have, and how particularly in Elul there is a lot to benefit from this focus. So I mentioned to you the other day Rav Zevin's essay about Nezikin. The essay is called Hayesod HaChiyuvi Shal Nezikin. It's here in this Sefer Or HaHalacha. And he goes through the concept of Chavala, like we said, and then this issue of what is the Chiyuv for Nizkei Mamon. So in the end, he has a few paragraphs here which I will share with you. He says that the idea of Shmiras Alecha, which is part of the Tzad HaShavah for the Nezikin, so there is a Hashkafa here, as he points out. He says, I'd like to take this point of Shmiras Alecha, I'd like to take it from Halacha to Agada, he says. That the Shmira Hamatima Menizkei Adam, Hiya Torah. So the element that is able to protect us from damaging forces is the Torah. And the Gemara in Brachas and Daf Hei and Aleph says, "Kol Akore Kriya Shma Mitaso Mezikin Bedilin Heimona." And it's the idea that one should say Kriya Shma Lamita, so that is something which is supposed to separate one from the Mezikin. So he goes on to say, "The Afal Pisha Perisha Pasher Hu Shmezikin Bedilin Me'Adam." Right, so what does that mean? You think it means that a person is protected from that which could hurt him. Shehem hamazikim lo yaziku also. That's the idea, that you'll keep the damaging forces away from you. Aval b'muvan sheni nitnu hadvarim l'sparish, but the second meaning we can bring, shehadam kishe'enu osek b'torah, when a person does not involve himself in Torah, yesh lo harbe kochos mazikin shebehem hu mazik es chavera. A person has a lot within him that could bring damage to other people. And through the process of the Torah, the Nezikim are kept away from him, the forces that he could use to damage someone else. That the damaging forces are separated out from him. That he himself should not damage other people. So arba avos nezikin mishnah ba'adam gufa. So the four avos nezikin exist within a person himself. Ashur, shor nagach. So you have a damaging ox. Gidro begemaru kavanasu lahazik. So you've seen now that the definition is that he has intention to damage. V'yesh locha adam shemiskaved amezu b'mazik asecherim nezek l'shem nezek. You have such a thing that people who are damaging to other people, or they do harm for the sake of doing harm. Gidro shal shein b'gamar hu shi'esh hano l'hazeka. The definition of shein is that there is actual benefit to the person doing the damage. V'kach yesh adam, and so too there are people shemiskaven lo yelech l'hazik l'shem nezek, who are not looking to do damage for the sake of damage. Ela shemumakom shadaber negel hanasu apratis, but when something affects his personal enjoyment, hu alul l'shaver l'mager l'hazik l'vadam ala hanasu, so that he's able to do all kinds of damage as long as he can fulfill the hana that he's looking for. V'regel, so what's that av about? Gidro shemazika derech hilucha, that its definition is that it does damage while it is on its path. V'tochein sh'adam mazik b'taris regel hu garu yoseh. And you could make the case that the person who does damage in the category of regel is even worse. Eina miskaven l'hazik, he's not trying to hurt anybody. V'yafin hano l'hazeko, and he's not even benefiting himself from the hazik. Ela shalhelch v'darko, but he's just walking on his way. V'eina misanyein klal, he doesn't care enough at all. L'das m'derech hilucho pogeh mishu, he doesn't even care just to check whether he is doing any damage to anybody. So much do people not matter to him. For anything, I didn't care about them at all. Think about them. Doesn't take up any space in his thoughts. Maybe he's going to step on people and trample things, and no one's going to be able to stop it. So that's also something that exists within people. And Eish indicates the idea that people have a foreign element that comes into them when they do terrible violence to other people. V'habor gorm b'maisav, and the bor represents a person does through his actions. That through his creation of damaging things in the world, people are going to trip and hurt themselves. That's a person who, throughout his activities, he's not careful not to cause problems for everyone, such as leaving things lying around in a public space or doing other things that expose people to danger. So here he goes on to say, Zelu mazeh. So this parallels that. Yesh b'Torah inyan shel shor. When we talk about Torah, we have the idea of shor. K'mo she'amru lo'olam yasim ad atzmo k'shor l'ol Torah. Gemara v'Rasara, a person should always make himself like an ox for the burden of Torah. It's a Gemara v'Rasara, hey mebez. V'chein amru sofi l'keturah. Okay, the Gemara in Ksubis as well. The Kabbalas ol Torah shall gather hashor, and the idea of taking on the yoke of Torah like an ox, like a shore. Shomer es ha'adam shlo yeh mazik b'shor l'chol gedorav. And that makes a person protected, that he should not be a mazik, like a shore, in all of its different ways, Karen, Shein, Verega. Af ha'shein shol kedusha, and so too the tooth of holiness. What does that mean? Ha'achila shol mitzvah, eating for mitzvah purpose. Ha'achila shol kocha mekaymim ma'isim tovim, the acts of eating which have the energy to give somebody the power to do good things. Shomros b'fnei nizke ha'shein shol nos v'tayvis asuris, that is protective of the nezek of shein, of all kinds of hanaz and inappropriate desires. V'chein ha'regel shol mitzvah. And so too, when it comes to mitzvah, we also find regal. He quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, "Haholchim b'taras Hashem," and "Ashiva ragli lebesecha." Shomeres b'fnei haregel hamazika b'darach hilucha. So that protects in front of the regal that is mazik when it is on its path, and also the eish of this we'll read in a few weeks. Mimino eish das lamo, he eish ochlaish. So the fire of the Torah is able to consume the damaging fire, and that again is a parallel. With a bor, and with reference to a bor, it says, "V'habor reik ein bo mayim," the pasuk in Vayeshev by Yosef. V'amru, what does Rashi quote there? "Mayim ein bo v'al nachashim akrav miyesh bo." There's no water, but there are snakes and scorpions. So this is a big principle. Kishein mayim meha Torah, when there is no water, meaning the water of the Torah, kakasuv haikol tzame l'chula mayim, az nechashim v'ekrav m'yeshbo. So what you have instead, you have snakes and scorpions. Because shabor einorek, when the bor is not empty, el yeshbo Torah, but there is Torah, b'tuchem anu bo v'ein sham nechashim v'ekrav. Then we can be confident in it, and there are no snakes and scorpions. Mishiyesh bo Torah, someone who has Torah in him, lo'olam lo yashuch v'lo yazik l'mishahu, is not going to bite and is not going to hurt anyone. Mishalomed hilchas chovo l'mazik, somebody who learned, this is the key part now, we're taking everything, all the ideas that we've seen, so now this brings us back to the opening statement from last week, that somebody who learns the laws of chovo l'mazik, somebody who studies these rules of what happens if you damage someone or you damage something, la'olam lo yia lo chovel v'lo mazik, that person won't be a chovel and won't be a mazik. Tzuru mi v'mi heim b'nei hatovim, see who, go out there and see who are the good people, she'enim kol kach tovim, and those who are less good, she'oskim b'chavolos v'rezikin v'tivachu, see that people who are fighting and who are causing damages and causing arguments, that these people are not people who are educated in the Torah. Rahman al-Islam, we do see sometimes exceptions to this, that people who seem to be involved in learning are also still involved in doing damaging things. You have to say to that there's something that they're missing, something that's not being allowed to enter in. And that's particularly tragic. And that particularly focuses us on making sure that that's not where we're at in things. Im shmirasan alecha, harei ha-Torah hi ha-shmira. So when we talk about shmirasan alecha, the Torah is the shmira, kakasuv, u'shmartem v'yasisa. Right, as the pasuk says, the Perush Rashi, Ushmartem is a Mishnah. Mishnah learning, that's the Shmira. V'chein Amar b'Kedushin, Asher Tishmarun, and that's also what we find in Kedushin, Asher Tishmarun, Zu Mishnah. Ushmirasan Alecha, the Shmira is on you, that the more you are cognizant of these principles, hopefully the greater effect it will have on you. So this is this is a major thing, and it reminds us again of what we're trying to accomplish with everything that we are focusing on this year, but particularly with an Elul mindset. So maybe just to quickly recap the highlights that we did in the past few minutes, and then we'll daven mincha. So we spoke about the additional words. I mentioned Rav Lachman's objections to the point about Hashavas Aveda as the key source. We talked a little bit more about this general chakir, about whether it's your mamon, therefore it's like you, or whether it's the lack of shmira. Maybe how Tosfos about a ganav, the two explanations of why a ganav should be chayiv, maybe that reflects those two possibilities. And Rav Asher Weiss's approach, that really these aren't two distinct theories, that essentially the gzeres hakasev is that a person is responsible for what his property does, like it's a shliach, but only within the parameters of what's reasonable protection. So if he did do the protection, so then he's going to be exempt. But other than that, it's as if it's something that he has done. And we then talked about how the source for Adam HaMazik, as Rashi and Dalet Mibbez makes reference to, and the Rambam and Chovel HaMazik make reference to, is a pasuk in the very end of Parshas Emor, Maka Behemi Shalmena. And we spoke about how that has four elements, and if you tweak any one of the four elements, as the Chabad Tzal Sasharon discusses in his essay, you might find a different impact as far as Chiyuv Tashlumin. So those four elements were Adam HaMazik, and if you tweak that, like you have a situation of Grama, that could change the outcome. We have the idea of a damaged object, so if the object is physically complete, such as Hezek She'ena Nikr, that may change the outcome. You have a loss to the owner, and if you change that, says as if it's insured or if it makes its other property, the owner, go up in value, so then that becomes a big machlokus, what the story is. And the idea that the item itself loses monetary value, and tweaking that might make a difference. Like, let's say you have an item that does not have much value because it's only appropriate for one individual who can't really make much money selling it, but that individual will have a big financial hit if he loses it, like it's his eyeglasses. So there again was a machlokus about whether there was a chiyuv for that or not. And then we got into the discussion of avos and toldos. We talked about what avos and toldos mean in different contexts, that we have two other contexts in which they're used, Hilchos Shabbos and Hilchos Tuma, and there they mean different things. We talked about how in Tuma it means that each generation of Tuma there is another status, descending order, so that justifies the language of avos and toldos. In Hilchos Shabbos it means something different, really. It means that for the most part, the toldos are just as chomer as the avos. Possible discussion about toldos shenitzricha legufa, but for the most part, practically speaking, toldos are treated like avos. The only reason they're called that is because they are derived through a ancestral history. That essentially avos are ki'ilu, they're in the Torah because they're in the Mishkan, even though they're not spelled out in the Torah. Parenthetically, by the way, you should just know, I don't know if I mentioned this the other day, but you see the very first Rashi in Vavakama writes, Avos kar lahanach t'ksivim bakra. Avos are that which is identified in the Torah itself. The Vilna Gaon used this to explain, did I mention this? The Vilna Gaon used this to explain the phrase Pirkei Avos, that all of the notions that you find in Pirkei Avos, which seem so, how to win friends and influence people, like, are really all from the Torah itself, and that's why the Gra's commentary to Pirkei Avos is all about highlighting various Gemaras that show you how a pasuk could be read to give us these principles. And so there is a different process here as far as Shabbos and as far as Tuma. So the Gemara here is asking, what's the story with Avos and Toldos of Nezikin. So we have these general categories. They share this common element of Darchan Lahazik Shmilas Malacha, but each one has its own element that allows it to be its own category. So that gives us Toldos, other things that have those aspects, Darchan Lahazik or whatever it's going to be. So the question is, Toldosayin Ki Yotze Behem, as the Brisker Rav asked. So once we have these distinct categories, so what about the quirks that are part of them? The quirks of different exemptions and the like, is that going to be passed on to the Toldos, or will the Toldos have their own rules? And then we just said very little about what the Avos actually are, but we mentioned Al-Pidara Chamusar, how Rav Zavid notes that the various elements of all of these Avos are things that represent tendencies within human beings as well. And the idea of Shmiras and Alacha could also mean that we have to work on ourselves not to have these aspects of our personality, which happens through Torah. And he brought various proofs that that could be the case, and various symbolic phrases in Torah that counteract all of the parallel, all of the various Avos. He says the idea of saying Kriya Shma Lamita is to separate the Mazikin. The Mazikin don't just mean people who are elements or forces that are going to hurt you, but it means you yourself have damaging potential, and that that should be squelched, that should be separated from you, and therefore the active learning is designed to bring that about. So unfortunately, we have seen that it's not always true that people can be involved in learning and can still be violent, it can still be damaging, but it means that there's something there very much missing. And as we head now closer to Rosh Hashanah and to a focus on Rosh Hashanah related material, it should be our bracha for this coming year that we should never miss the point of what we're learning, that we should allow it to truly impact our personality, and that all of these values should allow for a full recognition of the Gemara statement that we mentioned in the first day, that the Haiman Deboilim Havi Chasida, if somebody wants to really be pious, somebody really wants to be a chassid, he should involve himself in Milei D'Nezikin. These subjects, these principles should have an effect in making us the kind of people that will be successful on Yom HaDin. Okay, so on that note, who would like to daven for us? Anybody volunteer? Thanks again to Jebediah.